Welcome, everyone, to the Ready for the Draft podcast. I'm your host, Greg Schutz. This is episode 3 of the 2025 podcast series, where we take a look at the draft eligible prospects and get you ready for the NFL draft. And all the preseason preparation is leading up to the 2024 college football season, which actually kicks off this weekend, week 0, August 24th. The ACC and the Mountain West really looking to start their seasons off on a high note before really that full slate of games Labor Day weekend. ACC, you've got Florida State taking on Georgia Tech. Mike Norvell bringing in DJ Uiagalelei to see if he can resurrect that career after some disappointments at both Clemson and Oregon State. Taking on Brent Key's Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, a team that, you know, really it's going to be interesting to see where they fall within that ACC, probably somewhere in the middle of the pack at this point. Then, obviously, you've got SMU, Rhett Lashley's group, a brand new member of the ACC. They're going to be taking on Jeff Choate, his first gig as a head coach there at Nevada. Really going to be an interesting matchup there. SMU, I think, is going to throw the football all over the field there. You're going to have Preston Stone, who I think is an underrated quarterback. RJ Maryland, a pro prospect at that tight end position, catching the football down the field. But I think SMU runs away with it. And then you have a couple of other games there in the Mountain West. The start of the Bronco Mendenhall era at New Mexico. That's right, formerly of BYU and U of UVA, starting out there in Albuquerque. New Mexico taking on Montana State. You know, this is a powerhouse in the FCS, so it's going to be a tough challenge there starting out for Bronco Mendenhall. And then you've got Timmy Chang there at Hawaii. They're taking on Delaware State at home, so we'll get to see what the Warriors look like there in week 0. Before we get there towards the end of the week, we're going to go ahead and take a look at those matchups and talk about at least one player from each of those FBS teams that you want to keep an eye out for when we hit week 0. But this podcast really is going to be dedicated to my preseason rankings. We've already talked about the quarterbacks. We've already talked about the running backs. Now it's time to talk about the receivers. And I think when you talk about receivers, the first thing that everyone's going to do is compare it to the previous year, right? Well, the previous year had Marvin Harrison Jr., had Malik Nabers, and Romo Odunze sitting there at the top of the draft board. So I think this year at the top, you don't necessarily have that group, so you're not going to see receivers taken in the top 10 in the draft. I think really what you're going to see is a lot of defensive players, two quarterbacks, maybe one or two offensive linemen, and then it's going to be dominated by the defensive side of the football, which is a change from last year. Narrative last year, 14 players on the offensive side of the football taken before the first defensive player was taken. We also saw six quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks, three receivers as well, the aforementioned Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Romo Odunze. But this year's draft class, we've got some guys that we should be keeping an eye out for. I got three guys who are locks in the first round. After that, some other guys to talk about. Likely going to be day two picks. A couple of guys that could sneak their way into round one. But let's go ahead and jump into things. First on my list is going to be Luther Burden III out of Missouri. He and Teteroa McMillan of Arizona are kind of 1A and 1B for me, but with Luther Burden, what kind of tips him over the top is that breakaway speed. A guy that's going to be able to get vertical, run by you, ends up picking up yards in bunches, 86 catches, 1,212 yards, 9 touchdowns a season ago. This guy, look, 5-star recruit, decides to stay at home, and in doing so, I think it's really going to be interesting to see that chemistry that he and Brady Cook developed last year. Really want to see what that looks like coming into this season. Expectations are high in Columbia, so this is going to be a matchup and a pairing that's, I think, a lot of people are going to be interested in watching. Luther Burden, again, that speed, vertical, able to make you miss in the open field. Very difficult to bring down. He weighs 208 pounds, so he's built like a running back. So after the catch, very difficult to bring down. He's going to run through those arm tackles. He's also very physical as a blocker. There was a downfield block on Jason Marshall Jr. when they played Florida that helped spring Theo Weiss on a throw into the flat for a 77-yard touchdown. This is a guy, again, vertical, vertical, vertical. He'll make you miss in the open field. I think the route running needs to get polished a little bit. He'll round off some of those routes, allowing those defenders to get in and potentially make a play on the football. Love how he finds voids in the zone, though. 74% of his snaps were really in the slot to take advantage of him playing in space. That's something to really watch out for there at Missouri. Right now, Luther Burden, my number one. Number two, or really 1B, is going to be Teteroa McMillan out of Arizona. 6'5", 210 pounds. And look, last season really was a breakout year for him. 90 catches, 1,402 yards, at 15.6 yards per reception for a 6'5 receiver, and then 10 touchdowns. What you love about this guy is he's so nuanced, so intelligent of a receiver at such a young age. You know, you watch, whether it was with Jaden Delora or with Noah Fifita, excellent chemistry. But look, you know, he went to school with Noah Fifita at Servite High School in Anaheim, California. And the two of them, it was like, you know, they grew up together. So it was second nature. Just was, the ball was out before he was out of his break. He knew exactly where the football was going to be. And hands catcher, excellent job adjusting to the football, the body control, the way he's able to contort his body. Catch radius is phenomenal. He's got these really long arms. Uses those long arms to not only beat the press, you know, he's not going to allow those defenders to get those arms into him. But what's also fun about him is he's got the shoulder dip to allow him to beat press coverage. And once that happens with that dip, as the receiver starts lunging at him, he's already gone. He's already created some separation for himself. Awareness down the field, finding the voids in the zone, understanding where the defense is going to be, doesn't run those routes into trouble. Also make sure that he doesn't absorb a ton of contact whenever possible. If he sees the hit coming, he's going to do what he can to spin and get out of the way, not take that big hit. This guy's also, look, he's 6'5", so throw the football up, allow him to go up and get it. He's going to win those 50-50 balls. He's a nightmare in the red zone. You run a fade to him, he stacks that defensive back, and he knows that he's in trail technique. He's likely not looking at the football. So ultimately, he can adjust to that football how he sees fit, let the cornerback take it up the field if he needs to as he's going up and high pointing the football. Really late hands, late reaction to the football, adjust late so that the defensive back really isn't able to make a play on the football. Hands, incredibly strong, the hand-eye coordination. This is a guy that's played basketball, baseball player as well. So when I look at him, he's a guy that, you know, he's not going to be the burner. Can he create separation on a consistent basis? That's going to be the big question. That's a big question mark with a lot of the bigger receivers. But what you love about him is he's able to make plays at all three levels of the field. And he can, you know, the route running savviness, you know, he's able to sink those hips for a big guy and drive out of it. But the consistency with being able to separate, that's going to be the big question mark, especially at the next level against top-tier corners. Emeka Egbuka, number three on my list, 6'1", 205, out of Ohio State. This was a guy that, look, I think after the 2022 season, as a sophomore, over 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns, everyone was counting on him to potentially come out after the 2023 season. 41 catches, 515 yards, played in just 10 games, just 4 touchdowns, and you know, it definitely behooved him to come back for one more season, and I think he's a guy that everyone should be keeping an eye on. He's explosive, he's got those long strides, some of the build-up speed at times, but I think he's really sudden as a route runner, understands how to get open, change of direction is you know, that high end, it's elite. Lateral transitions, you see that from him. He's a guy that understands how to navigate the zone, runs a full route tree. I think that's something that you definitely see there as well. Takes advantage of the defensive backs that are going to get overly aggressive. So another very intelligent receiver, consistent hands catcher. Timing is always a beautiful thing with him. I think that's one thing that I can say about all three of these receivers is their timing. They understand what to do with their routes, where to go, how to set up their man, and how to ultimately be there for the quarterback, present that strong option for the quarterback in space. All three of these guys, the timing is absolutely there, impeccable. The question really with Egbuka is he's proven to be a number two receiver. No question about that. We've seen him kind of play second fiddle to Marvin Harrison Jr. Now he's the guy. He's the number one. I know that they brought in Jeremiah Smith, a fabulous freshman. They also have Carnell Tate there. But he's going to be asked to be the number one receiver there in that passing offense. What can we see out of Emeka Egbuka? Can he shoulder that load? That's going to be a big question mark there. I think that'll really help his draft stock if we can see him become the playmaker that everybody's expecting him to be. After that, got some question marks for Evan Stewart out of Oregon. Evan Stewart is a guy that I think to this point has been more about the hype and the potential than the production. 6'1", 175, not the biggest frame, but this is a guy that has the speed to make plays at all three levels of the field. So it reminds you a lot of Xavier Worthy, right? 6'1", 175, the slight frame, can get rerouted easily, so obviously there is some concern there. Just 514 yards last season, 4 touchdowns. He's getting into an Oregon offense with Dylan Gabriel as his quarterback. That's really what you're going to be looking for there, is Evan Stewart to be a first-round pick. You've got to be able to produce in Will Stein's offense. I'm expecting a 1,000-yard season out of him. Anything less to me would just be a disappointment. And a lot of people are already putting him in their first round because of the expectations, because of the potential. But look, I'm not just playing with possibilities here. I'm talking about the sure thing. I haven't seen enough from Evan Stewart to warrant a first-round pick. That said, there is some definite savviness to his game. You watch that game against Alabama, one-on-one against Kool-Aid McKinstry, outside leverage down the sideline. Just ahead of him on this back shoulder throw that's put to the outside, he adjusts to the ball late, as we mentioned. That's something that Tetero McMillan was so good with his timing. Wasn't allowing Kool-Aid McKinstry to react to the football. The placement was perfect, and an easy 32-yard gain, right? Understands the ability to come back to the football, makes play, the contested catches as well, finds the voids in the zone. He's quick, getting in and out of his break, so he can create that immediate separation. And he's going to be a speed guy for sure, but consistency is going to be key for him. Trey Harris out of Mississippi, 6'2", 205. And look, there's a lot of momentum going with Jackson Dart as a potential Heisman Trophy candidate. And I think in order for him to be a legit candidate, he's going to need to get big play out of Trey Harris, his number one wideout. Back-to-back season with 900 yards through the air, 18 touchdowns in those two seasons. 2022 was his third season at Louisiana Tech, transfers to Ole Miss, 18.2 yards per reception in 2023. This guy's going to get physical. He's going to get physical with you. He's going to run through the jam. He's going to get physical at the top of his route. He's just looking to play some bully ball whenever he can. But this is also a guy that understands different releases. You see his ability to make a quick jab to the outside and forces that corner. Once he ends up opening up, then he's able to go ahead and cross the face of that defender, get that inside release, and is open there for a target for the quarterback. He's not a burner by any means, but a guy that can create a little bit of separation down the field. We love his ability to create separation late. That's something that he and Luther Burden are excellent at. It's creating that late separation, giving the quarterback a target, and being able to make a play on the football. I think the size there with him, the physicality. Look, he's 6'2", 205, but he plays actually a lot bigger than that size. So that's something that you'd love to see, his ability to shield the defender from the football. He's going to make himself available for the quarterback, and he's going to make sure that he puts himself in a position to make a play on the football and put that defensive back on his back. Elika Yomanor, Stanford. A lot of people aren't talking about him. He's 6'2", 210, and just put on the game against Colorado, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. This was a guy who, look, I know that Travis Hunter, it was his first game back after suffering that lacerated liver against Colorado State, but man, Yomanor was absolutely ruthless. This is a dude that was showing speed to run by him, showed the ability on back shoulder fades to be able to adjust, allowed Travis Hunter playing over the top. Hey, they're even. Let's go ahead and get that back shoulder throw, understanding where the corner was and being able to make a play on the football. His ability, look, had a touchdown to win it. And really, Stanford in that game, they were down 29-0, and they were able to come back and win that game. And obviously, Elik was a huge reason for that. This is the guy that came from Canada, and ultimately that game, as I talked about, 3 touchdowns, catching 13 passes for a school record 294 yards. The catch in overtime, pulled the ball over the helmet of Travis Hunter for the score. This is a big receiver, big physical guy, 62 catches, over 1,000 yards and 6 touchdowns. But this was the game that really kind of cemented his status as a legit pro prospect. And really, I thought that was what helped springboard him with Ashton Daniels, the quarterback. Going to be interested to see what he can do in ACC play. Now, one of my favorite receivers in this draft class, and really, he could very well end up being ranked even higher, possibly in that 4-5 range, is Torrey Horton out of Colorado State. 6'2", 190 pounds, started his career at Nevada, and really took off at Colorado State the last 2 years, over 1,100 yards and 16 touchdowns. And this is a guy, he's a savvy route runner, understands how to get open, deceptive speed for a guy his size. Look, you know, he lines up all over the field at the X, at the Z, in the slot. It doesn't matter where he lines up, he's going to make plays everywhere. He's one of those guys, it's difficult to cover him because of the nuances with his route running. He understands where the defense is going to be. He runs, it sounds simple, but he runs to where they're not. And makes a play on the football, excellent hands, the catch radius, his ability to adjust to the football in the air. He's one of my favorite receivers because of the intelligence, where he takes the receiver position. Just a tactician and a guy that, there was a play against Colorado. He catches a drag route and then has the speed to get outside, turn the corner, get down the field in a hurry. He was the backside of a 3x1 crossing route, contested catch with the corner right on him, able to pluck the ball on a high pass. 3rd and 5, picks up 6 yards. So he's going to do a lot of the dirty work, but he can also make plays down the field as well. Now, there are two dates that I'm really interested in on Colorado State's schedule. The first one's going to be against Texas, the number 4 ranked Longhorns. What could Torrey Horton do against a top-flight defense? That's going to be a lot of fun to see. The other game is going to be just a couple of weeks later, matchup against Colorado, that revenge game, if you will. He's going to get to go up against Travis Hunter again. Keep an eye out on that matchup. If he can perform well against Travis Hunter and then also have a big game against Texas, then Torrey Horton's draft stock is going to just continue to skyrocket early on in the season. Tez Johnson out of Oregon, second Oregon receiver as well. 5'10", 160 pounds, and look, he started his career at Troy, 3 seasons there, shows up at Oregon, and his adopted brother, Bo Nix, is the quarterback. Incredible chemistry there between the two, 86 catches, over 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns. This is a guy, look, he's not very big, he can get rerouted, we know this because he's only 5'10", 160 pounds, but he's going to be an excellent slot receiver, really allow Evan Stewart to make those plays on the outside, much like Troy Franklin was able to do last season with Bo Nix. Now you've got Dylan Gabriel in. Can they build that same level of chemistry? And really, you want to see what Tez Johnson can do after the catch. This guy's explosive, excellent route runner, can create separation at will at all 3 levels of the field. So I think Tez Johnson is looking to put together another 1,000-yard season. And really, it's not, how can you really have a breakout when you have put up the numbers like that? But I think he was overshadowed by Troy Franklin. Could he get overshadowed by Evan Stewart as well? Possibly, but I think this is really a stage for him to emerge as one of those names to be talking about. Xavier Restrepo, Miami. Another slot receiver, 5'10", 195 pounds. First 3 years there at Miami, just kind of a so-so career to that point. And then 2023, 85 catches, just under 1,100 yards and 6 touchdowns. Really excited to see what he can do building that chemistry with Cameron Ward. He's going to be that safety blanket, a guy that is going to be able to attack the middle of the field, a guy that's going to attack the seams, and he'll become a favorite target of Cam Ward. So Cam Ward developed really good chemistry with the receiver Lincoln Victor, so I could see something similar there with Xavier Restrepo. How about Juice Wells, Antoine Wells of Mississippi? I feel like he's kind of the forgotten man, right? Because at South Carolina, 2022, after 2 years at James Madison, where he had 116 catches and 21 touchdowns in those 2 years. He shows up at South Carolina, 68 catches, 928 yards, and 6 touchdowns. He and Spencer Rattler really gained some momentum there at the end of the season because they played 2 teams ranked in the top 10, both Tennessee and Clemson, and they blew the pants off of both of those teams, right? Really, Tennessee was the blowout. Clemson, a lot closer, but still, some big plays from Juice Wells, using that speed, using that route running ability, his suddenness to make some big plays, rattling off some excellent route running ability, the explosiveness. 11 catches, 117 yards against Tennessee. Had a 72-yard touchdown there against Clemson as well. And really what ends up happening, he doesn't play in that North Carolina game. And if you'll remember, Xavier Leggett was supposed to be his number two. He was supposed to be more of the possession guy, I guess, if you will. Xavier Leggett hadn't caught nearly enough passes in his career. And in that first game against North Carolina with Juice Wells not playing, what was crazy was Xavier Leggett had more yards receiving than he did in his entire career there at South Carolina to that point. Then Juice Wells ends up catching a quick screen, able to make a cut back to the inside, chose the speed, weaving through the defense to score a touchdown against the Bulldogs. After the touchdown, as Georgia was driving, they show him on the cart. Turns out he had a broken bone in his foot, and really the rest is history. Doesn't get to finish out the season, ends up transferring to Mississippi. He's another reason why people are excited that Jackson Dart could potentially be a Heisman candidate, be one of the Heisman frontrunners when it's all said and done in Lane Kiffin's offense. Another guy who's in a new place is Isaiah Bond out of Texas, formerly of Alabama, 48 catches, 668 yards, 4 touchdowns. This is a guy, again, Bond is not the biggest receiver by any means. He's one of those guys, though, who is going to be using that speed to his advantage. You're going to see him get down the field. I think they're going to use him a lot like they did with Xavier Worthy. Allow him to showcase that speed at all levels of the field. He's 5'11", 182 pounds, a little bit bigger than Xavier Worthy. But again, a guy that is also going to have to deal with fighting through the jam. He's a guy that can be easily rerouted. So keep an eye out there with Isaiah Bond. Didn't really get to showcase enough there at Bama, in my opinion. He wasn't targeted enough. So really looking forward to seeing what Isaiah Bond can do for Quinn Ewers in that offense. Could bode well for his draft stock overall. Caden Prather out of Maryland is another interesting guy. 6'4", 212 pounds. This past season, 42 catches, over 600 yards and 5 scores. First year with the Terps after 2 years at West Virginia. This is a big receiver who runs really well. That's one of the things that you can absolutely say. Against Michigan, 35-yard gain. He had inside leverage on a go route, tracked the ball well down the field, timed the jump, high pointed the pass over the corner, something you absolutely saw with just his athleticism, being able to get the speed down the field, that vertical play, being able to create some separation, and then using that height and the leaping ability to his advantage. Understands where those corners are going to be and running those routes accordingly. Then, that Ohio State game against Maryland. 15-yard touchdown, runs this in route, and Davison Egbenosin is in trail technique and actually had his right arm, his outside arm, pinned. So ultimately, what does Cade Prather have to do? Use that inside arm with a one-handed left-hand catch going up for the football for his touchdown. So this is a big physical receiver. They have to replace Talia Tagovailoa, so you want to see exactly what type of production Prather can put together. He's one of those guys that may slide in the draft overall, but ultimately the pre-draft process is where you may see him start to rise up because of his athleticism and his ability to make plays on the football. Dominic Lovett out of Georgia, 5'10", 175 pounds. You remember he started his career at Missouri, transferred to Georgia, over 600 yards last season, 4 touchdowns. He and Ra-Ra Thomas, the 6'2", 200-pound receiver who started his career at Mississippi State before transferring to Georgia, they're two guys that I think are really going to shoulder a lot of the load, along with the tight ends, Benjamin Urosik, the transfer from Stanford, and Oscar Delp. Because look, no Ladd McConkie, no Brock Bowers. There's going to be a lot that's going to be expected of these guys. They're going to want to have some balance to their offense, really get things going with Carson Beck. So keep an eye out for both of those receivers. I think if Connor Wegman has a big year at Texas A&M, he's going to need to get help from Moose Muhammad, Hussein Muhammad's son, 6'1", 195. This is a guy that when he's going all out, when he's making these plays, he showcases some athleticism. He shows the range with his catch radius, excellent hands. It's just you want to see the consistency out of him. That's going to be the biggest thing. And then I think after that, looking at a lot of these receivers, fresh faces, new places, for a guy like Zachary Franklin. Now he's at Illinois, formerly of UTSA and then Ole Miss. 6'1", 185, back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons there for the Roadrunners, and 27 touchdowns during that time. This is a big dude. Uses his length to his advantage. He's more of a possession receiver. He's not a guy that's going to blaze a trail by any means. He's not going to take the top off of the defense, but he's got the savviness, understands route concepts, is able to get separation late. Excellent catch radius, body control, tracks the ball well while in the air. Didn't get to play a whole lot there at Ole Miss, so now he's transferring to Illinois. Luke Altmyer, he's going to be the number one weapon. Going to have to be with Isaiah Williams and Casey Washington, no longer there from the Illini. Another guy to keep an eye out for is going to be Dante Cephas. Now, Cephas, at 6'1", 178, started his career at Kent State, and 145 catches, over 2,100 yards, and 12 touchdowns. Goes to Penn State, expecting a big year there. Ends up not really being much of a factor, only caught 22 passes. So now he's on the move to K-State. Really going to be interested to see what happens there. He's somebody that I think there's still potential there. You just really want to see what he can do at his new location. Keandre Lambert-Smith, another guy that's leaving Penn State, and he's transferred to Auburn. This is a guy that was productive for Penn State. Last year, 53 catches, 673 yards, and 4 touchdowns. I know that there was some disappointment with Drew Aller, really trying to figure out that offense, what they were going to do. Can he ultimately be able to elevate his play there for Auburn in SEC play? That's going to be a huge question mark. But definitely a guy that has a lot of talent. He's been on the radar of scouts. I think he'll end up being a day 3 pick when it's all said and done. I think J. Michael Sturdivant out of UCLA, a guy that started his career at Cal and had a big freshman All-American in 2022, a big year as a freshman, 65 catches, over 700 yards, 7 touchdowns, transfers to UCLA, 597 yards and 4 touchdowns, 16.6 yards per reception, a guy that has speed getting down the field at 6'3", 205, he's got good size. So UCLA, I know that they've got some, there's some turmoil there because really they've got to figure out what's happening with Sean Foster now, the head coach there, but you've got Eric Bieniemy as the offensive coordinator, so I think that switch could actually do wonders and work well for a receiver like J. Michael Sturdivant. So he's one of those guys I think could be flying under the radar. Other receivers transferring to other places, Julian Fleming, formerly of Ohio State, now at Penn State, probably going to be one of those key receivers for Drew Aller. If Aller's looking to potentially be a first-round quarterback, he's going to have a big year, going to have to develop some chemistry there with a guy like Julian Fleming, especially with Lambert-Smith and Cephas in new locations. Ja'Cory Brooks, formerly of Alabama, another Bama receiver leaving. He's heading to Louisville. Going to be an interesting see what Jeff Brohm can do with him there. That's another one. Dorian Singer. Look, I think he was a Blitnikoff Award finalist at Arizona, transfers to USC, was underutilized. They opted for a lot of the younger guys, so now he's going to be at Utah. Can Cam Rising get the best out of this guy? Obviously, Cam Rising loves throwing to the tight ends, but he needs a receiver on the outside. Doesn't have Devon Bailey, so this is a guy that really is going to be counted upon to be a factor in their passing game. Brendan Presley of Oklahoma State, this is his senior year there for the Pokes, and a slot guy at the next level, but a guy that can make plays down the football field. He's going to be an intriguing prospect there for the Cowboys. Brew McCoy is the big physical receiver there at Tennessee, transfer from USC. Keep an eye out for him because he's battled some injuries. He's now healthy, so you want to see what he can do in Josh Heupel's offense as well. Quite a few receivers with question marks, receivers in new homes. How are they going to adapt to the new system? But I really feel like right now I've got 3 receivers who would come off the board in round number 1. And that's Luther Burden, Tetterell at McMillan, and then Emeka Ebuka shortly following after that. And then obviously you've got Evan Stewart, Elik Iomonor, Torrey Horton, and Trey Harris. Torrey Horton again, those games early on in the season, watch that draft stock if he has big games there. And I just think about like a guy like Cooper Kupp. And Cooper Kupp didn't get to face top competition often. When he did, he took full advantage of it. I just think about that Eastern Washington, Oregon game where he was just phenomenal and showcased his ability to just uncover, you know, and nobody could really cover the guy. He was always open, and that's something that I'm looking for from Torrey Horton. And I think if he has a big couple of games there to start out the year, he's going to be one of those fast risers in this draft class. But and look, McMillan, if he has a big year there for Arizona in Big 12 play, then I think he has a chance to supplant Luther Burden as that number one wideout. But look, Luther Burden, if Missouri is going to contend in the SEC and challenge for a playoff spot, Luther Burden has got to be the guy there at Missouri. So keep an eye out there. And then obviously, as we talked about previously with Emeka Ebuka, he's going to be the guy. He's going to be the number one receiver, at least starting out. If he loses that number one target to Jeremiah Smith, the freshman, then ultimately that's kind of saying one thing, that this guy isn't a guy that's going, he's going to be a two. That's not bad. But I think that's going to limit that draft stock a little bit. But, I mean, when you talk about Jordan Addison, he was the guy at USC, ultimately is a phenomenal number two there for Justin Jefferson in Minnesota. But if Ebuka took a backseat to Marvin Harrison Jr. and then takes a backseat to the freshman, that's going to be, you know, cause for some concern because it questions, you know, the some of those limitations start creeping in. You start wondering about that. And look, Evan Stewart, you're going to have a big year there at Oregon. You know, you have to show that you know, you can live up to that hype. If not, there's no way that I could put him in round number one. So those are the receivers. We're going to be talking about the tight ends next, and then we'll get into the offensive line. We're also going to be talking about week zero of the college football season, which, again, it's crazy that it's right around the corner. And then, obviously, we don't have enough time before we get into the full slate of games because we're going to be breaking down all of the matchups there. But as we continue throughout the first few games of the year, I'm going to sprinkle in my top 10 by position because you need to know who to keep an eye out for. I want to make sure that I'm bringing all of that to you, each position, who are the guys that I need to key in on, who are some of the guys that may be flying under the radar as well. So with that, we'll go ahead and put an end to the podcast. But until next time, everyone, for readyforthedraft.com, this has been the Ready for the Draft podcast. I've been your host, Greg Schutz. Take care, everyone. And until next time, I am out of here.